solution, and then hopefully we can do it expediently. All right, so I'm going to call the Ulster County Health and Human Services Committee meeting for May 4th to order. I'll take a motion to approve the March 30th special and April 11th regular meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
That's so nice to like see your hand. Okay, so the first resolution we have is Resolution 139, setting a public hearing on the proposed local law number 4 for the drug take back. Motion to discuss?
Move it.
The second is Erner.
Joe wasn't able to make it. He did ask if we could postpone it until next month.
Okay, and you did see that so you all should have gotten that the attorney came down on the fact that there is a state law that does not allow us to have a local law. Mm-hmm. I know that you're interested in possibly changing it to a letter, which I'm sure many of us.
Yeah, there's no truth behind that. We're
right.
Gonna, yeah.
We'll talk
further with counsel, and yeah, it needs to be implemented. There's no reason for these pharmacies not to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's two approaches that I could think of for you to consider. One is we should hear, like I had said earlier, Michelle Hinchey is carrying a bill right now to expedite this. We should find out where we are with that on the state level, and I know there's an assembly person who's carrying the bill as well, who happens to be a pharmacist. And then the other one is this idea that if it's a matter of specifically just the cost of drop boxes to provide to our pharmacies, then maybe we look into like an ARP. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine it's that much money, and instead of it being a whole policy, we just provide drop boxes to our pharmacies. And
that's kind of where we started. They go for about $1,600 each, and there's 33 pharmacies that I pulled off the state list. That would mean. After that, the way that the law is structured, that the pharmacies wouldn't have any additional costs because it's up to the manufacturers to take care of that.
Once it's cleared.
Right. And we had talked to the sheriff because they had gotten theirs under a grant. And, he had offered initially to move them out of some of the substations that weren't open as frequently as some of the town halls, which are there, but... As that discussion went on, there was so worried about security.
Right.
So.
Well, maybe it's a targeted approach. It's not necessarily every.
Yeah.
I think it might be worth talking also. Dietrich's has it at their two sites, one in Kingston and one in New Paltz. So it might be even worth a conversation with them on how do they manage, what's the cost of them actually, getting the, sending it away, disposing it. But, okay, so. No action is going to be taken on that. Resolution 167, adopting a negative declaration for the demolition of the former Ulster County Jail located on Golden Hill. Motion to discuss. You should tell. Second, Erner, or Nolan, whoever wants to win. Okay, discussion on that.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay. Another committee I'm a part of, the Energy Environment, also has this, so I'm going to try and stick to the housing.
Yeah.
And the health aspects of this. Okay, housing. Of course, I think we're united with one voice among the 23 of us in the legislature about the need to build affordable housing. And I have concerns overall about the project, the way that we seem to be taking some public property and giving it over to the private sector. In general, I don't like that idea. This resolution has to do with ARPA funds that I'm still not clear and as to whether that was going to be paid by the developer that we've selected or the county through the ARPA, but we could use it for something else if the developer had been willing to pay for it. I have concerns over the outreach that's been done so far, and as far as I can tell, is planned to be done around impacted individuals who could potentially live at this site and where their voices are. There were several community housing advocate groups in Kingston that wouldn't sign off and say that the outreach had been sufficient because that's how they felt, and so I'm wanting to raise that issue as well. Let's see what else here. Let's start with those. Let's start with those issues.
So have you gotten that, you brought those up to Mark, do you have any comments or responses?
I spoke with Legislator Erner in depth, I think, for over an hour on those issues, and we're about a year and a half in the process. There was several public input meetings that have been had with both the developer and I think the Housing Development Corporation on this project. There was plenty of opportunity for public input. As I told Legislator Erner, the daycare center that is now being looked at as part of this project came out of some of those public listening sessions. As far as the use of the ARPA funds when the contract was done through the corporation and the developer, it was said in both the RFQ and in the contract that the demolition would be the responsibility of the developer, but that the county would look into funding sources for it, and then ARPA came. And so we looked at potentially funding it through ARPA, and that's why we put this forward. The reason the county's doing it is because the county still owns the property. Even though we've had a resolution to surplus, we have to still do some segmentation and do some site plan work to actually surplus the property. And in order for the developer to do the demolition, they were going to charge an administrative fee, and it wasn't going to necessarily use union labor. So, you know, the Housing Development Corporation decided to seek the 1.5 in ARPA funds.
And so have you discussed it all? Like, if we don't pass this, I would assume they would then pay for the demolition costs.
It's hard to say. I mean, if we pass this, I don't know whether this project is 100% moving forward even with this. I mean, I brought this up in the chairs meeting the other night. Like, this jail is right now not being used and is not a benefit to the county. We should demolish the jail regardless of whether this project moves forward. There's a significant financing gap, and the developer is doing everything they can, working with the state and federal government and others, to try to figure out where to get the finances. But because of increased construction costs and other things, there's significant gap in financing. And so it's possible that this 1.5 mean if they were it was put on them to do it, they may not move forward with the project. I'm not threatening that. That's just a possibility.
Right. But they did agree before knowing there's money.
In the contract it said we would seek sources of funding for the demolition.
Legislative Petit.
Now, were there other proposals that would put in, and do you think they'd still be interested should this one fall through?
I can't speak to that. I think we would go back out to RFQ after demolishing the site. I mean, I think, you know, it's been in the capital project for the last 10 years that we would demo this jail with
right.
county funds and then have something shovel ready. I think with the increased cost, you'd see many developers, and I can't speak to, you know, what the developers would do right now based on what they did with the RFQ. I know the RFQ's been awarded, so we can't just go to the second
right,
developer. It would have to be a brand new process.
Nolan?
So it does seem to me that there are two elements here. One is the demolition of an existing structure that is not providing any benefit, and that is not easily repurposed. So demolishing the building makes sense to me, and bringing in a good project makes sense to me. I have attended some of the meetings for outreach, and I've looked at the materials, and it seems like a good project to me to provide affordable housing. You know, if the community doesn't feel that there's been enough involvement, then I think we should maybe look into providing a mechanism for that going forward. Sounds like there's been some of that at least. So I'm in favor of moving forward. I think that it's been a long time that building has been sitting there being a liability.
The one question that's come up a few times is the question of like sustaining the affordability of the units that are in there. And since it sounds like we're, you know, investing more here on, you know, in service of the developers, you know, financial outcomes, is this perhaps an opportunity that we can ensure that we're going to have permanent affordability or near permanent affordability of those units?
If anything happens to the affordability of those units, either they were to somehow switch them out and they wouldn't be affordable anymore, or they were to sell the property, we are taking a $1.5 million stake in the project by doing an equity share in the project by doing the demolition. So they're giving us a share of the equity on 0.5 if it ever gets sold or if it's ever not affordable housing. By the way, like, much of the funding sources that they are seeking and believe that they'll be able to get 9% tax credits through the state have those same recapture requirements.
I feel like you didn't really answer the question. The question was, is investing this money allow us to then put an expectation, kind of like it's a pilot in a way, like that if we're putting this money in, this is what we expect back from you, not will we get equity if they sell it, but committing them to this being exactly what they do. And I'll just sort of add to that, we hear a lot about how developers won't do something if, but they understood when they applied for this RFP, they didn't have a promise that we would be putting in over $1 million towards it. We said we would see what we could do, but if they agreed to doing this and they submitted it without knowing there was going to be $1 million, I find it hard to believe that they're going to pull out if there isn't the $1 million.
They didn't know when they signed on to this agreement that we were going to be in the middle of a pandemic that would make construction costs go through the roof. I mean, in fairness, there's not a lot of fat in this project. These projects typically do not make a lot of money for the developer, and there are already requirements by seeking the other funding that they have to remain affordable. So to answer the first part of your question, these units, I think, have a 30 to 40 year minimum requirement for the tax credits that they have to stay affordable, similar to a pilot.
If they get those.
Well, if they don't get those, the project's not buildable. Like, that's part of, I mean, I think with any affordable housing development, if you don't get the funding, that's how they become affordable.
But why can't we put our own stipulations on it?
With this funding?
Yeah.
I could talk to them. It just would be additional to, I mean, it wouldn't add any benefit because it's already there. If they get the funding and move forward with the project, they're going to be required to stay affordable.
So they wouldn't complain.
Probably not.
Okay,
yeah, I would like to see that change happen.
Okay.
I mean, I would vote in support of this tonight, but I'd probably, if between now and the floor vote, if we don't have a more definitive answer on that, I don't think I would support it on the floor.
And then I guess I'd also want to know what happens to that $1 million. So say we give them $1 million, they demolish it, and then pull out, or don't go.
We're not
further.
Giving them the $1 million. We're doing the demolition. We're taking the ARPA funds. We're going out to bid, and we're demolishing the property.
So really,
it would stay with us, and we would have a flat.
Okay.
Site.
I agree with the legislator. You should tell. I don't think this resolution worries me so much because we do need to demolish the property. I would feel better if the transfer of the property that we had passed last year was rescinded so we could get all of the stipulations in there. And I think that would be my only concern. I'd like to make sure that we have a 1-to-99 year agreement that it's going to be affordable. What else did I have in here? But that's where I mean. I think
I believe it's already in there, and I don't know that you can rescind the surplusing resolution, but.
But it hasn't actually transferred yet. If it transferred, that would be different. But it's my understanding it hasn't transferred. We're putting money into the Kingston City planning process and into this. So essentially, if the LDC gets $1.5 million for the sale of this property, I think we've invested two. or close to it. So, yeah, again, this is great. I think we should tear the thing down, but I worry about supplementing. And then, of course, as a private business, they're going to go for IDA funding.
They don't go through IDA funding. That's not how these projects work.
They cannot go through IDA funding?
They could, but they won't. They will seek a pilot with the city of Kingston, but it's not through affordable housing projects of the 9% credits. They don't typically go through an IDA. They go straight to the taxing jurisdiction.
Legislator Erner, do you
want to? Yeah. Who's going to live there? Has that been settled yet?
So there's a wide variety of ranges. Many of the units are 30% AMI, and we spoke about this on the phone. I think the average family of four, the medium income in Ulster County is something like $80,000. So you look at that, that would be for people who make $24,000 a year, is about 80 of the units, and those are mostly the senior units. It goes all the way up to at most 80% AMI, and there's a large portion of the family units that are 50%. So there's plans. I believe they're available on the Housing Development Corporation site or the Planning Board site that show the site plan, but there's various different buildings. One is four floors, and I believe that's a senior building, and then a bunch of different townhouses meant for families.
And will the quality of the housing depend on what people's ability to pay is?
No. So just to, again, because I went into further detail with you on the phone on this, I'm just for this meeting, if you qualify, there will be vouchers, and if you qualify for a unit, regardless of your income, we will not put you in this unit if you make this amount of money, and a nicer unit if you make this amount of money. They will all be the same quality units.
So from the time that we pass this resolution, if we do, to the time that the next decision point, what is that time frame, and could we use that time for addressing any of these concerns to make sure that people are fully satisfied, that people are invested in the project?
Well, I think the next decision point, other than tomorrow night's Environment Committee, which I don't think I'm going to have your answers there, and that's more along the line of seeker, the next decision point would be the full legislature. And I can also have information for the caucuses. I believe much of what you're looking for is probably in the surplus resolution, or at least in the deed that would go from the housing development. I mean, there is a requirement for affordability. We didn't just put in the deeds that you could turn around and do what you want with this. So I think what people are looking for is probably already been done, and I just need to find the proof of that.
Legislator Erner?
I appreciate what Legislator Nolan just said. Couldn't we do this differently? Couldn't we have this remain public property and become public housing, or couldn't we have a way for the future residents there to have an equity buy-in so they could own it themselves ultimately? Like, why do we need this developer even at all to be present in the project?
Well, I think it's roughly about an $80 million project. And again, the revenue that goes to the developers, I think less than 10% of that. Much less than 10%, I think, or around 10%. I haven't
horizon.
Seen
over,
I think, 30, 40 years is not like, because there's deferred developer fees, and so they don't get anything right off the bat. But it's about an $80 million project to build, so sure, would it be possible for the county to own public housing? Maybe. I think that would be, it's an $80 million decision to do that.
We couldn't apply for the same grants, though, that they're getting and so forth?
No, they're tax credits, and we don't pay taxes.
Gotta change that.
All right. Are there any other questions on this? Are we prepared to vote? All right. So all those in favor of Resolution 167?
Aye.
Those in opposed? Two opposed. All right. Thanks. Resolution 200, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 7. I don't know if I have to hand this to Craig again.
Well, look, if I can speak out of turn, completely out of turn.
Go, please do.
We haven't, we're not on the floor considering it at this time. We're literally just in between resolutions on the agenda, so I'll say if we don't move this for discussion tonight, Jay, it's just the same effect as taking no action, correct? And I'm fine with that. I want to say my part, which is we need to change our ethics law, and we just had a public hearing for that. It's going to be up again for a vote in laws and rules. We need to change the date that law takes effect. Right now, the date in the resolution is January 2023, which means we wouldn't be able to take up this legislation until next year, which I think is pretty bad. So I'm hoping that folks that are in attendance at Laws and Rules, and everyone will be here on the floor when we vote on this, will support amending that resolution so that it can take effect more quickly. And that is my request, and I'm happy to see us move on to the next resolution.
All right, thank you. That's helpful. Okay, Resolution 209, setting public hearing on the sale and or transfer of 5 parcels of land owned by the county and the towns of Asofas, Kingston, Lloyd, Plattekill, and Ulster. Motion to discuss?
No, I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Discuss. Mark?
Yeah, I'm going to just request that this be postponed because there's a lot of work that's left to be done in the Housing Development Corporation.
Got it. Motion to postpone?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay. And maybe at another time you can update us on what is happening so that we are aware.
If I could just add for the record, one of these properties, when it was on the auction, the interested property owner said they had put in a $100,000 bid on it. So, that's significantly more, I think, than the back taxes. And I'm just wondering if the benefit to the county wouldn't have been better off taking the $100,000 instead of transferring title over it at no cost to an LDC.
So we postponed it. Why don't you have that conversation with Mark on the side so he can actually look into the specifics of that?
I have this before. Yeah, happy to have a conversation.
Great. Okay. Resolution 240.
Do we have to call a question on the postponement?
Oh, I thought I voted. We didn't vote?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
no, we
didn't.
The motion to postpone is on the table. Yeah.
I thought we voted on that. Oh, sorry. All in favor of the postponement? Sorry.
Sorry.
I just played a petite confused me for a minute.
I'm so sorry. So I have to go sit in the back of the room now?
Yes. Although, I don't know if there is a back. Okay, resolution number 246, confirming appointment of a member to the Community Service Board is Romero Duffy. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second.
Second.
Erner, any discussion? Erner?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind the committee, or I just learned about this, but the Community Services Board, I guess, has sent letters to, maybe we should bring this up in new business, actually. I can speak later. Yeah, I'll speak later.
Okay. All in favor of Resolution 246?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, unanimous. Resolution 247, confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board. This is for Dan Ahouse. Nolan moves second. You should tell. Any discussion?
The background on this individual, do they have, or am I thinking the wrong community services? I thought community services, mental health. Yeah? So he's got a mental health background.
That's only one of 3 subcommittees of the board. He's being reported to the board at large.
Okay.
Well, the Community Service Board oversees the mental health. I mean,
and substance abuse and people with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. We'll do Legislator Erner and then Deputy or Deputy Executive.
Sure. I was just going to share that I was there when they did the interview of him for the board, and he has some lived experience that he shared with his family that makes him interested.
Legislator Erner, did you have anything you wanted to ask?
No, thank you.
Okay, all in favor of Resolution 247?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 248, confirming appointment members to the Ulster County Youth Board. This is several different people. Motion to discuss?
So moved.
Nolan, second, Petit, any discussion on this one? All in favor of Resolution 248?
Aye.
Aye.
Resolution 249, confirming appointments to the members of the Ulster County Board of Health. This is also a couple of doctors. Motion to discuss. Nolan, Stephan Petit. Any discussion? Legislator Erner?
Yeah, I'd just like to see if we can make it possible for legislators like me who would like to go to this kind of meeting and also the Community Services Board meeting, that possible. I find conflicts with other committee meetings that the county is having or other boards, not usually other boards, but specifically if the health, human services, housing, and anything related could all, if it were possible for me to attend all those meetings, I would love to be able to do that. And because it's one thing to hear from the chair, but it's not to be able to participate and discuss.
So what can I suggest that you on your own reach out to Tara regarding the Community Service Board and reach out to Dr. Smith regarding the Department of Health Board meetings and find out when they are or what kind of
just
possible.
Yes, Monday.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, I can do this, but I just wanted to bring it to people's to the committee's attention. There was definitely a conflict between, Monday, April the 11th, we had Community Services Board at 5, we had Health Human Services at 5:30, and we had Board of Health at 6:30, and that wasn't cool with me. But I know that was an exceptional, that just shouldn't happen, in my opinion. We should be able to go to all those meetings.
Right, that's you know, a single circumstance of moving it to a Monday, so I don't think that'll necessarily happen again. But okay, and you know, if you want to discuss changing a community service board, feel free to talk to the commissioner about that, and she can do what she wants with that information.
Okay.
Okay. Did we vote on this?
We did not.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor of Resolution 249? Any opposed? Okay. 254, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Department of Health for the child lead poisoning. Motion to discuss.
Please let me read this.
Nolan, second?
Awesome.
You should tell. Okay, so my only question was, which I brought up in the chair's meeting, do you have something on that?
Yes.
So let me just clarify the question. We had heard from Dr. Smith that while there was regularly funding to pay people to be trained for lead abatement, there was a lack of any funding to do lead abatement, so they had people trained but were not actually, and she provided us a list of several dwellings that were still not abated because of that. And so the question was, is this for training or for actual abatement?
So the answer is this is for the prevention, which is basically prevention of lead poisoning. So things like teaching people how to clean lead dust or make sure that children aren't around like peeling lead paint, things like that.
So like community training?
Community training, yes. And training of people in the construction trades is what I understand.
So I guess the request is if the executive's office could do any efforts to actually find funding for lead abatement, that would be great because we could train people to assess or remediate, but if we don't actually have money to remove all of the bad lead paint, then we seem to be missing the whole story.
Yep, we'll look into that.
Super. All right, any other questions, I'm sorry, on 254? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 255, amending the 2022-2027 capital improvement for project number 528, Veterans Cemetery. And I think we could block this with 257. And isn't there?
No, there will be a bonding one. But it's
okay, so a motion to block 255, 257?
Motion.
All in favor of the block?
Okay.
Okay. Motion to discuss? Second? Okay. Discussion?
Yes. Is this project finished now after this?
No.
After this?
After so we're done because you do have like a groundbreaking or ribbon cutting, which is opposite, on Memorial Day.
Wait.
It would be a groundbreaking on Memorial Day.
It'll be a groundbreaking. Okay.
It would be the completion of the project. I mean, the beginning of the project.
Okay.
Because of Memorial Day, just
So it's something symbolic. Yes.
Okay. So I have big questions. I'm totally supportive of having the Veterans Memorial Cemetery, to be clear. I was also on the New Paltz Planning Board when this was first brought up to be putting it in New Paltz, and I was very happy with that then. I'm happy with it now. What I'm absolutely 100% unhappy with is that this was originally approved in 2018 as a $270,000 project and is now a $2.7 million project. And I really, for me to vote in favor of this, would need to be completely compelled that, one, justice, a nearly $3 million veteran memorial cemetery is warranted, but also how it could have possibly gone from $270,000 to $2.7 million is just beyond me. It's all county funded. It's all us. And, you know, things get expensive, then do less things or change things. But I just cannot, I mean, I'm happy to give you the floor to talk about this, but I need you to know that I'm just flummoxed by an increase to this level.
Understood. Let me know when the floor is mine.
The floor is yours.
It is now, there's no other. Okay, I did want to defer to the deputies on the 2018 start, because all of that is well before my time. I didn't start in this position until 2020.
So I'll be really brief. 2017, the 2018 through 2025 capital program was created. At that time, it was basically, there wasn't really an expansion thought of. It was building a pavilion. It was doing some landscaping in the current footprint of the cemetery. By about mid-2018, 2019, after having a committee of veterans look at this, and then also realizing that projections that by 2021, 2022, we were going to be out of space in the current footprint, they expanded the scope. Now, unfortunately, while expanding the scope, we did not expand the scope in the capital program from year after year. So it looks like the exact same scope. But the original thought of the project was not the area across the street. This is adding 3,000 plots. This is adding a candelaria. Like, here it's adding 5 candelarias, which is, I think, 90...
Columbarias,
sorry. I knew I was going to botch that. That's where ashes go. Now, Dennis is working on value engineering, and he believes that by ways and means, he'll have already got the contractor down $300,000 more than the budget that we showed you, because we can take and do 2 candelarias instead of 5, and that will work for now. There's other things that we can take off. So he believes he didn't have it ready for this meeting, but he believes he's able to value engineer about $300,000, which would get it down to overall, not just this contract, but a $2.3 million. So we ended up with about a $1.3 million estimate going into the bidding process for this year. For a total project, and again, we're coming to at 2.8. I think we can get it down to 2.3. But a lot of it had to do with where we are with construction costs. So we had 5 bidders do a walkthrough through the bid. Only one of them decided to bid, and that's what the market price was the 2.8. I'll let Mark take it from there. That was just a little bit of the history.
Just to kind of step back with the design, I know when there was a veterans committee brought together to do the design, and that was led by my predecessor. The design was done, and the estimate that you're talking about was also from about the 2019. When they picked the design and decided this is what we're going to go forward with, so the estimate was 1.4 back 3 years ago before all of everything else happened with what's happened here with buildings and supplies. So a little bit about me. So I'm a 26-year Air Force veteran. I know a lot of you. I know some of you, but not all of you know who I am or know all about me. 26 years. I've deployed 5 times in my time. 4 were to the combat zone. 1 was to Antarctica. So that's time for another discussion I would love to have with anybody. But my last duty station was Stewart Air National Guard Base, and I served there as the Command Chief Master Sergeant. During my time, the military paid for my education. I attained my MBA. I was an adjunct instructor at 2 colleges, St. Thomas Aquinas and Mount St. Mary's, in business for about 10 years. And my last assignment, I was the Command Chief, as I said, and my job was to really fight and take care of the airmen and the Marines on my base. To work very close with the general, female general at the time. Now she's at the state. She's about to put her on her 2nd star. Worked with them just really to take care of our airmen, make sure they had everything that they needed to be successful. I had a lot of opportunity when I was ready to retire to go elsewhere.
I really appreciate this, but I'm going to ask you to focus on this particular
I'll tie it in here. I chose the VSA because of the passion that I have of taking care of our veterans, because I am a veteran. I am a constituent of what we're deciding upon. I have spent months and months on a deployed environment. Right. Before I started, Ulster County decided to bury veterans. Right. In the current footprint, we are almost full. And that's why this was started, and that's why this scope grew. Currently, 99% of our nation is protected by 1% that's serving in the United States military. So 1% of our people are what I deem heroes. They're the ones signing their lives on the line, willing to fight for the 99. These service members, you know, they're willing to do what we ask them to do as a nation, because they want everything to be better back home. When you sign up, you don't pick which wars you're going into. You're not picking which conflicts the country's going to send you to. You just go. And the reason you go is because you want to take care of your family. You want everything to be better when you get back. These are heroes, in my opinion. These are people willing to do whatever it took, put their lives on the line for us. I count myself now.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to please speak to the price going from $270,000. I hate to be rude. I completely appreciate the service that you and all other veterans have done. But this, I need the conversation to be on the price going from $270,000 to $2.7 million. I will say it can't be full because it hasn't been opened yet. I mean, the ribbon cutting is for the land. The land is still there, so it can't actually be full yet.
We have a veteran cemetery.
I know. And the new property, which is next to it, which was agreed upon in 2018, is sitting there. The pavilion hasn't been built in it. It hasn't. None of it's been done.
Our current footprint is full.
The current one.
It's across the road.
Right next to it is.
But that's the confusion, I think. So Mark was saying that in 2018, the pavilion and that was supposed to be in the old area. The construction for 270 was supposed to be in the old area. That's what I'm told from Mark.
I was the planning board chair. I went and saw the site.
At 2018,
I was showing the drawings. It's all brand new. Right next door, or right next to the existing veteran cemetery, was more property that I believe was even donated. And
in 2018, that decision was made.
Yes.
In 2017, when the capital program for 2018 to 2023 with the $270,000 number, that was not the plan. I sat in John Simonson's office and worked through the new expansion. The other plan for the pavilion was going to be in the current footprint for $270,000. Then when we decided it had to grow because we were going to run out of space, as Director Cosapulli just said, and we're out of space. We're actually out of our current footprint. We're building plots outside of where we were supposed to be.
But tell me, true or not, back in 2018, from what I understand, the current cemetery is full, or getting full, and there was another plot associated that was going to be used is there anything in there, in the ground, besides grass right now, on that other piece of property that was identified in 2018?
No, because we've done 3 years of archaeological work.
Exactly. So I can't, I'm saying, you can't say that is
this
full.
Footprint is.
I understand. But the one that was agreed upon in 2018 is not full because you haven't, you've just been doing planning on it. You haven't actually built. So I just wanted to clarify, that was what I meant, is that that one that was agreed in 2018, the expansion to that other thing, that other space can't be possibly full because you haven't actually started building on it.
Correct.
So I think you just stated what was said, and I was present at those meetings in 2017 when they were just going to put up a pavilion, and I remember that being a very simple, small project, fully endorsed it. And then the next year, they came back and they said, you know, we're almost out of space. We need to do this much bigger thing and acquire land. And I remember those presentations, and I fully supported those. So that's how you got from 250,000 to 1.something million.
It's not.
That's my recollection, so we can check the records on that.
Yeah, I have them. I mean, I have the breakdown of it, and I have the listing of what each element costs, and I'm saying that because there's been nothing but planning at this stage. And so it's gone, it's been all these years of planning, and now they're ready to do. So there's a shopping list of things to put on this that are, you know, exceedingly expensive things. And
so I didn't get to finish what I was saying, actually. I understood in 2018 this much bigger proposal, and it may have had additional elements added in, and maybe we look at more than $500,000 of those elements if we are so cash-strapped that we can't do that. But between adding those elements on, which is value to our community and to these veterans, and with the increase in construction costs, which is outside of everybody's control, and the passage of time, which maybe wasn't completely out of our control and should inform us about waiting and waiting and deliberating and deliberating, because costs of construction generally go up with time. So we could have predicted in 2017 and 2018 that if we were not starting until 2022, we would have an X percent increase, and the construction people can tell you what that number would be. They cannot have predicted the increase in prices of 2 years of global pandemic. That may be redundant, of pandemic. So I think we can just look at these numbers and say, do we want these purchases and these construction activities for this price? They did a bid process. They got one bid. That means that it wasn't a choice construction project that people were going to make a lot of money on. So I think we're against the rock. And yes, it's not good. But what is the argument? That we should not have these things? Then we should look at each of the items separately and say, what is the cost, and can we simply not afford that at this point?
And Dennis is doing that as we speak.
That's what you've been doing to China.
Dennis is doing that
Dennis
as we
is
speak.
Doing that.
Anyone else? Legislator Erner and then Legislator Lopez.
Please, go ahead.
You know, I rarely agree with anything that Bernie Sanders says. However, he said something that resonated with me, is that we can spend $1 trillion to send our soldiers off to war. We could spend a fraction of that to take care of them when they come home. Now, with something that's as sacred as a cemetery, that not only accommodates the veteran, but will accommodate their spouses as well, I think we owe them that. And I'm willing to get behind this. I'm kind of hard on trails all the time. I often use that as an example. You know, we spend millions and millions of dollars on trails. Absolutely. We can't spend a little bit more. You know, granted, it was $270,000 to begin with. And now it's actually, when I looked at it, I thought maybe you just added a zero by accident. But look, construction costs go up, you know, and things happen along the way. You know, $3 million for a cemetery. You know, for our veterans that have, done so much for this country, I think is without question for me. So I'm going to be 100% behind this. And I would actually like to be added as a sponsor.
Legislator Erner?
Given the questions that the chair has raised, would it do much harm to postpone this a month, get some questions answered? I'd like to be able to support this and just see if the numbers match up. I agree with Deputy Chair, that it would be worth it, and we just want to know that the numbers are what we thought they should be, and I think a month could give us the chance to do that.
I mean, I would be willing, if the postponement meant actually looking at these expenses and significantly cutting them, I understand prices go up not this much in such a short amount of time. I think I understand we're in a pandemic. We could wait until the pandemic is over. There's other development that's happening. But if the postponement means actually dramatically reducing these costs, I think that makes sense. I will say also in reference to what Deputy Chair Lopez said, I would much rather spend $270,000 on this and put $2,500,000 into veteran health care or veteran housing if I was to given the choice. So, it's not about support of the veterans, but, that's quite a lot of money that we could use in other ways to support veterans. But, again, are you proposing a postponement?
Yes.
Okay. Before we vote, I'll just see if there's a second on the postponement. No?
I'm kind of curious to hear more discussion before voting on a postponement.
Okay. Well, we're not going to vote on the postponement. I just wanted to know if there was a second, so I don't lose track. Nope. Okay, we'll wait.
Yeah. Mark's probably going to say the same thing, but I just want to note that he's been putting in a lot of work in planning for the groundbreaking on Memorial Day, and I think the community members are and the veterans are already aware of it, and many are participating. So if we were to postpone it by a month, we would not be able to.
Why? We still have it. Isn't the property still ours?
Yes. I have a couple things, if you know, because there's a lot of discussion that happens. So. Again, like you said, and I know there's a lot of misconception here with the pricing going up. The last true bid, the last estimate was done in a capital project on a capital budget that was submitted by my predecessor, and it was $1.4 million, at that point, that was approved for this. So it didn't go from, exactly overnight from 220 to 2.7. That was back in 2009 before all of this stuff happened. Like I said, inflation, gas, everything else with building supplies. That was based on all of the items that are on the list that you have in front of you. That's the design that was done by the Veterans Committee. That was what the engineer had said, okay, this is what we estimated would cost at that time. We didn't rush right through it because we had to do our due diligence with different types of archaeological studies. And in New Paltz, as you know, we have to do right by the Native Americans and Indian tribes. We had to do three phases to satisfy, the Indian nations to the point where they would sign off with the New York State Board of the Cemetery. So that's really what held us out of that, or else this really would have been a $1.4 or $1.5 million project 2 years ago. This is where we're at with it now. We are running out of space in the current section. We are almost out of space, and as I was saying before, we don't pick where we go, and because of that, Vietnam veterans right now are suffering from Agent Orange, and I get a little emotional because, like I said, I'm invested in this. This is my life. They've suffered from many different types of bladder cancer, different cancers directly because of Agent Orange. They didn't pick to go there. They were forced to go there, and they're 75 to 85 years old. They're the ones that we are going to be needing this new cemetery expansion for, because we are almost out of space in the older section. My generation, the post 9/11, we have been exposed to burn pit toxins months and months on end. The government has preemptively announced presumptive medical conditions that we can expect to get, so then we can get VA compensation for it, but we were put out there. So I can expect myself from my forced combat deployments to get lung cancers because I spent so much time in toxic burn pits. It's for those reasons that I feel veterans deserve the best. The president said, we're going to do our best to take care of veterans. We know that they're going to have medical issues. Yet Castle Point now looks like it's going to close. Let down at the federal level. State lets us down. We can't, as a county, in my opinion, let our veterans down. And they deserve the best. This design is not by me. I didn't do anything with it. This is the bid that came out of it. It was an estimate is $1.4 million. worth this bid because of COVID and the supply chain, but these heroes deserve an honorable, dignified resting place for the next 100 years. And that's what this 3,000-plot cemetery will provide. 100-year plan, 3,000 plots. Thank you.
The one concern I have with postponing it a month is that currently it's slated to be done around November, which is, this is, again, remember, this is basically all outdoor construction. So we're not talking about building up a frame and then being able to do construction through the winter. We're talking about building in, like, plots in the ground and digging up. And so when you're talking about winter construction outdoors, that's a difficult. And so we start to push against that to where we may lose part of the construction season, and then it may have to be, they may have to stop and then remobilize next spring, which would add increased costs.
Can I ask a question? I mean, can't you start with burials before having a $360,000 sign put in? And can't you start it before you put in $215,000 of landscape plantings? Like, you know, I'm very uncomfortable with this idea of all or nothing, that without, you know, $216,000 worth of planting, we can't start burying our veterans in this space. We have the land to do it. And where I support the postponement idea is, perhaps there are elements of this that you could get it just down to what you need so that you could start burying individuals in this space without having to have a $300,000 sign up yet. And maybe you could think about whether that makes sense or there's another source of money for that. And I'm just going to say again, in terms of doing best by our veterans, I absolutely agree. And if this was about putting $2 million to veteran health care, I would feel very, very different right now about it. It is a place that we need to put it in. So this is not about supporting our veterans. But anyway, that's my comments on the idea of postponement, is that there potentially is elements of this that can proceed that are much more within the original budgeted perception amount and then giving us time on the larger items. Legislator Nolan.
I can see the benefit of thinking about what would best help our veterans. We have done very well for our veterans in Ulster County with housing. It was one of the three things that you named. And we don't have a very effective mechanism to address veterans' health care. We do have this, and veterans groups, a very coherent community, has come to us over a period of many, many years. I've heard them at the meetings that I've attended over a decade, and this is what they're asking for. So, I think to say I would have a better use of that money is a little bit coming from the outside rather than from the inside of what this community is asking for. If they're asking for more than we can afford, then I think that's fair to say. But I am not sure this is more than we can afford. I have some questions. Do we have a PLA on this? I mean, we only got one bid, so we may not have much flexibility. Are there any local benefits that will come from moving ahead with this construction during a time when we need stimulus? So are there benefits for others in addition to the direct benefits to the veterans community, the indirect benefits to the whole community of treating veterans as we should?
My answer to that is that this is a veteran-owned business, and they are committed to doing what they can to do value engineering. It is very important to them that they are able to do this work, which is why we probably got the one bid that we got. So I would say much of this money that goes to them will benefit veterans.
And what is the likelihood, best guess, that prices would go down by deferring this project for a year?
I don't think they would, and I think we're going to start to see increased bond costs as we delay.
I'm not suggesting. I'm suggesting taking things off the item, off the list, just so it's clear. I'm not saying wait till the signs cost less. I'm saying maybe a smaller sign. But I got Legislator Gavaris and Legislator Yushchev.
I'll just ask my question now because it'll come up Ways and Means and having the relevant players in here makes sense.
I can't hear you, John.
Sorry, I was saying I'm bringing this up now because it's going to come up at Ways and Means and I can ask it now. To Legislator Walter's point, this isn't, I don't have an issue with what, it's a matter of when we do something. Right now, there is no shortage of work out there for the trades. We've had projects here right now that we're trying to do. I can't even get somebody here to look at the project, let alone put an actual bid onto it. There is so much work out there. So there's not a competition factor, so the prices are going to be artificially inflated. I disagree with the Deputy Executive Writer's statement that it won't be different in a year. It absolutely will be different. A year, maybe slightly more than a year, maybe a little bit less, but prices are going to come down because the bubble is going to burst. There is the interest rates are going up again. This is the highest since 2000 that they've been. Prices are going to come down. I don't have an issue of what needs to be done. It should we really have to pay a premium to do them now. Doing the work that we absolutely have to be able to provide at least the basic necessary service to the veterans, we should do that now. But we shouldn't pay a premium to have the whole thing done now. And I think once you have competition, you have others who can bid on this project, then you know you have a true cost. But right now, I mean, just it's anecdotal, but we have a house of hospital loans across town. We tried to get a bathroom that had a leak into it. We had to go somebody to go over and look at it. One person went in there, $9,000 just for labor alone, a project that should cost maybe $3,000, $4,000 for labor, $9,000, because they know if they get the job, great for them, but if they don't get it, they've already got plenty of work lined up. And that's the issue right now, is there's a lot of work out there because of the stimulus, because of the ARPA money that's out there, because of all these projects people have given stimulus, now the work is there. But when they're actually going to be hurting for work later, that's when projects like this make more sense.
Legislator, you should tell.
Yeah, I kind of started the day feeling very skeptical about this cost, and I spoke with Deputy Executive Ryder and understood, you know, once you understand the $200,000 to $1.4 million thing, that makes that all makes a lot of sense. You know, the increase from that point here, I think, is really what we're debating right now. And you know, I'm listening to the conversation, and I'm imagining the space and being there and kind of the experience that we're talking about here. And I think there is something that's a sort of intangible component to it. I think it's an incredibly spiritual aspect to what we're talking about here. And you really, if we're for veterans, I can't imagine not supporting this at this point. You know, this is it's not just the veterans that you're speaking about that you know deserve to be interred somewhere worthy of their sacrifice, but I think we rely on the beacon that we build around our veterans so that others will enter the service, and that's an incredibly solemn decision that someone makes. Knowing that they're really having an impact, and this is a way that we can show that. And while you know, I would love to spend a dollar more for every dollar that we spend here on the healthcare of a veteran today, and you know, housing people that are you know housing veterans today. I think that there's something intangible about the dollar that we invest here in this very spiritual way. So you know, for that reason, I'm going to be supporting this.
So, is there a second on the postponement? All right. So, all in favor of resolution number 255?
Aye.
I'm sorry, 257? All the opposed?
Block.
On the block?
On the block.
Opposed? Okay. 258, approving an execution of contract for $25,000, causing the aggregate contract to be equal to $50,000 for the Jewish Family Services for Office of the Aging. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Petit. Any discussion? All in favor of resolution 258?
Aye.
Resolution 259, approving the execution of a contract for $76,000 with James McGinnis with Department of Social Services.
So move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of resolution 259?
Aye.
Resolution 260, approving the execution of contracts for rates for Orange County Department of Orange County Transit Board for Social Services.
I'll move.
Move it. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution
260.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did have a question.
Sorry.
Do we know about is this a routine service that we need all the time, or is this something that we need occasionally?
Mark, or legislator, I mean deputy executive.
This is a mandated service that we're mandated to provide transportation for special ed pre-K kids. The school districts provide it for those schools.
I guess, thank you for that. My question is more, is this something that, is this something that we could provide with directly with some sort of existing public transportation, or why do we have to contract this out, I guess, is it, and maybe we do, but it would help me understand if I knew this is something that we are always doing or sometimes doing.
This is, I believe, something that we're always doing because it's for kids who reside in the county, who have to attend schools outside of the county, and I think they have, you know, the routes are individualized, so the bus has to come straight to their house.
Typically, this is like one child per bus, a case aid.
And they're specialty buses.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not.
With the accommodations for
Legislative Petit?
I just have one note. Obviously, it's over 50,000, so it came to us, but there's no cap on it. It just said rates over 50K. Is it possible to do an estimate, or, I mean, is it going to be 150,000? 200,000 charged for students.
Typically, it's when we do it like this, it's just the rate so that we know what the rate costs, and we anticipate it going over 50. So we come here as opposed to like signing the contract as a rate and not coming here until it hits 50. So we don't have a choice of how much we spend because it's a mandated service.
Okay, right.
We're just setting the rate.
Yeah, and sorry, just to add to that, this is not like additional or new kids. It's existing kids that we've always served, but it's just going to another contractor because they can see what didn't happen.
Okay. So you don't feel comfortable putting 75 or 80, just, okay. Do you know what it was last year?
I don't know that information.
I think sometimes it doesn't go over.
Yeah.
Remembering back from 4 or 6 years ago. So this is pretty close to the average.
I believe we already took a vote on it, but do you need us to do it again?
I can begin it.
Okay. All in favor of Resolution 260?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. 261, approving an execution of contract $500 for the amount exceeding $50,000 rehabilitation services with Department of Mental Health. This is 100% state funding. Nolan, second. For discussion, Erner, any discussion? All in favor of Resolution 261?
Aye.
Okay.
I'm a no.
What?
I'm a no.
Who's one now? Yeah. Okay.
We still haven't spent enough to cover his sister's salary, too. We've got to put another $400,000
in. I'll be a no, too, actually.
Okay, that's two no's. Okay, so in terms of old business, we're not going to do the Health Alliance right now. There is the Housing Working Group meeting. Jay, can you just give us a quick update on what's going on with people signing up for that?
You have almost everybody who was emailed to sign up responded. I think you're only missing like two, and each group has at least a half a dozen. Right. So I think with the leadership of each subgroup, if you are ready, I think that I can work with you each individually to come up with your first planning meeting. It is a working group meeting, so we are allowed to have it by Zoom, which I think will help all of the larger group of people be able to attend. And then you're not just restricted to evening or whatever works for your schedules. We can do.
I don't think I responded, but I would like to be a part of all of the, at least the ones that I can attend via my schedule. So
okay.
If I can get the...
Are the meetings going to be publicly noticed?
So, go ahead.
No.
Okay.
You're welcome to invite as many people, but it's a working group, so it's not a subcommittee or an official committee of the legislature.
And that's important because it meets the other need of making sure people can be on it by Zoom from all over. Because
with the
new laws, we either publicly notice it and then it has to be in person, or we do it on Zoom so it can people can come from every corner of our county.
I asked because mostly because I wanted to hear the conversation about that topic, about this as compared to another working group that we're doing right now, where there's been some stress about who gets invited to the meetings.
Right.
So I appreciate that.
And that's an important thing, is that because each of you are kind of being chair of at least the first meeting, and obviously you can decide once you're there, and as a working group, it could be anybody who wants to take on the responsibility of chairing. You could switch chairs at each meeting or whatever you want. But I would encourage you all that one of the first things you do is also say who might we want to invite that's not here.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, and you can always, and that can continue in not that it's not a closed club just because you came to that very first meeting. So if you could just reach out to Jay maybe with some potential days and times that would work for that initial meeting. Obviously, until you have your group together, figuring out some kind of consistent. I would hope, though, that the goal is that that you have, you know, at least four meetings over the next 4 months, if not more. I mean, it's up to you and your group, but that this continues. This is not going to be for perpetuity. So this is, we're hoping that you're really taking the time to figure out what other kinds of information you're going to need so that your group can really make some good decisions, come up with some potential ideas of resolutions and work on those so that we can then bring it back to everyone and then, you know, bring to our full legislative body two handfuls of potential resolutions, you know, 6 months from now would be fantastic if possible. And I know there is work that's already happening with the housing group that Dennis can also share. You know, the more that these work in alignment with what the executive's office is doing, all the power, because that means that these are more likely to actually succeed. But that's not a mandate either. Be as creative as your group wants to be. Any questions with getting kickstarted on that kind of first meeting?
This sounds good.
And there'll be a clerk. It won't necessarily be Jay. I think we'll be using Lori and Jay, or maybe mostly Lori. But you'll have a clerk there so that for follow-up emails, to keep attendance, to send, you know, and it's Zoom, so it could be recorded, and they can have a copy of those. And so you'll have clerks, or a clerk. Clerks, all of you, but one clerk. All right? Yes.
Could we plan?
Phil's fine.
Could we plan? At least I would like to, for mine and Abe's. And we didn't talk about this, but to have an in-person location for folks who would like to be in a room, and like we book some county space for that.
That's always possible. Just keep in mind, maybe after your first meeting, who your membership is, because you know you have a senior citizen who doesn't have a car, who lives all the way in Phoenicia. May not be so inclined to having to go. So I would say if your group feels like they want to meet in person, let's talk. You know, the Zoom is to make it easier for all your members.
I meant hybrid, just to clarify.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if a few of it's a working group, so there's no law set to it. So if a bunch of you are in the same space and you manage to be able to Zoom others, that's your prerogative, of course. Nothing's stopping you. There's not like quorum issues that you have too many people in one space. It's fine. Yeah.
I will say somehow we knew the future, and in the community, the Restorative Justice and Community Engagement Center has, and we barely use it, but a fantastic like Zoom capabilities for the room.
Oh, good.
So
to know.
Yeah.
So if you want to do a hybrid in there.
We're going to do a law enforcement meeting there probably next month.
But who would they schedule those meetings with?
Kim Mapes is.
For the space.
Yeah. So I don't mind. Or obviously Jay can do it.
It's not oversubscribed, right?
No.
No. Unfortunately.
We could talk.
All right.
I have one other question.
Sure, go ahead.
Some community members who are interested to participate in this wanted to understand what the powers of these committees would be. In other words, like, would is there any mechanism by which they would come to these and actually be able to make decisions that we were bound to respect in the bigger committee?
Well, I would say we respect everybody's opinions and input, and, you know, it'll all turn into a resolution. And that then first our committee would vote on, and then depending on whether there's money or other things, other committees would vote on, and then the legislature. I will say that my experience with doing the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force, our resolutions had the support of 40 community members who worked very hard on it, so it was much easier to pass because there wasn't a question of what did this person think or what did that person think, or because being able to present a resolution that a team of 12 community people and legislators all came together on has a lot more clout than something that one legislator or just the executive's office comes with. So I would say that, you know, assuming they're well thought out, reasoned, well researched resolutions that have your full group's support, they would probably be very successful. I think that we should, I'm very hopeful that maybe we put in, you know, 5 to 8 resolutions and at least we see 4 to 5 of them like really quickly get implemented, potentially. I mean, it'd be wonderful.
I was looking at the choices. They seem very academic. I mean, are we going to have some real policies? I'd love to work on one that had a policy to move things over to our LDCs and to...
Do policy.
The Housing Committee came out with a report last year for zoning, you know, initiatives.
So when we discussed it at our last meeting, we recognized that in these groups, you have a few choices. You can create resolutions that are policies related to that. You can create resolutions that are incentives to municipalities, or you can create resolutions that are direct county funding in order to do things. So all three of those are at your fingertips for your groups. And you might want to even arrange it that way and say, what kind of policies do we want? What kinds of partnerships with municipalities do we want? And what kinds of county-focused, you know, initiatives do we want? So that allows you to brainstorm a larger set. But yes, absolutely, there's no reason why some of these resolutions won't be policy resolutions, unless your group doesn't come up with any. Yeah.
And it's a good time of year with, you know, you're going to have a few meetings and then the budget. And so it's a good time of year to potentially get things
into
the 23 budget.
Yeah. If we are on it and we keep moving on it. So it might be a little extra work, but it's not forever. It's just, you know, let's get some really great ideas together. All right, a motion to, no. Steve, do you want to give your spiel before we adjourn?
I would like to just have a couple of remarks, and then anyone who would like to stay for a tour, I'd be glad to, be very pleased to show you around a little bit. Particularly people who haven't been here. So let me start with a little bit about what we did 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we presented at a national conference in Atlanta around our work around substance abuse, particularly opiate reduction. And it was kind of an interesting, a large conference. They had a cameo of someone who stopped in and gave a speech who was not on the agenda that everyone here will know, Joe Biden. That gives you an indication of the stature of the conference. So there was about 3,000 people there. So our presentation wasn't to the full group. You know, you have all these workshops. But we had about 500 people come to our workshop, which was really like one of the largest workshops that there was there. And it was really well received. It was Victoria Reed and myself presenting. I sort of opened it up. I told the story about the why, kind of how. And then I talked about our journey here and how during the DSRIP of some years ago, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, when we were tasked with trying to reduce unnecessary ER visits, and we discovered that there were a sizable portion of patients that came here seeking IV Dilaudid, which is a very strong opiate. And we realized that it was a very fine line between treating pain and enabling addiction. So I talked about that journey and how that led us into eventually becoming the first hospital in the Hudson Valley, have all of our ER providers waivered to provide Suboxone, and about some of our relationships with other providers, because we're really big on collaborating. We've been very, very successful as a small place with unusual collaboration. Some of them with the Institute for Family Health, very obvious, provider to provider, but others with the Sheriff Figueroa and some work that he was working on that kind of, you know, we're in two different lanes, but they suddenly intersected, and we've collaborated. And you know, for example, if we have someone here who needs to get into an inpatient treatment program, there aren't any around here necessarily that are available to take somebody. So they may have to go somewhere else. And the sheriffs will have a deputy come down here and take the person there, even if it's out of the county, which it often, almost always is. So anyway, so I talked about those kinds of things. I know we did pretty well because by the time I got back to the office here, we'd been invited back to speak next year. When we were done with our presentation, the moderator who had moderated us wanted us to meet her boss, Dr. Gupta, who works in the White House. So that was kind of nice to have lunch with some guy who works in the White House, who was really good. Yes.
Okay. You don't watch MSNBC.
So I use that as an illustration so I could talk about all kinds of programs and different things that we're doing, but just to show that the magnitude of some of the things that we're able to accomplish in a small rural setting actually are getting traction at a national level to be asked back. And then this week, we got a nice invitation. I'm trying to decide if we can do it or not, to go and do the same presentation at another conference in Austin, Texas. The problem is it's in August. Who wants to go to Austin in August? But anyway, it'd probably be pretty hot there. But they have air conditioning. It can't be that bad. They have great music in Austin, for those of you who have never been there. It's great. The food, the barbecue, the steaks. I mean, everything about, you know, Texas is big. So I just use that as sort of a vignette to illustrate that the perception of things that are small are not always that they aren't very good. We're doing really amazing work here, and our hospital is a primary hospital, a critical access hospital, so we have a narrower scope of services than you would have in a larger hospital. But unlike a lot of hospitals that have been collapsing and doing narrower, we have expanded. And the reason I can't give you a complete tour is that we have a lot of COVID patients on our inpatient unit at the moment, because COVID's back. It's not really in the community. It's in the broader Hudson Valley. And there's not a lot of places for people to get rehab who are COVID positive, because nobody wants them. We've carved out a niche, and we're really good at caring for people that have COVID. We also have programs for long COVID for on an outpatient basis. So we have been kind of innovative. Our tagline is innovating, collaborating, providing award-winning care. So there aren't a lot of awards in healthcare, but we get to present at conferences. Small hospitals go to conferences. They don't usually get to present at them. And before COVID, we presented at 19 conferences in the 2 years before COVID. So we were, I mean, that's a lot. We're almost once a month. And we're presented, we presented in April. We're going to present in June, possibly in August, if we decide to go there. So we're starting to crank back in that direction where people are interested in the work that we're doing. We collaborate with everyone. We collaborate with the county. We collaborate with the Institute for Family Health. For those who want to stay, we're going to look at our new emergency department. We'll look at our affordable housing. When we talk about the need for housing in our community, we're really ahead of everyone else. We are the first not-for-profit, for-profit joint venture to build affordable housing in New York. So, I mean, that's, so we were kind of ahead of our time without really knowing it. We just didn't realize that we were first. Kind of nice to be first. I like being first. I really do. John knows if we're, you know, if you're number two, you're me too. You're not first. So we've been doing affordable housing for a long time, which is suddenly, you know, we're a little ahead of our time there.
Explain what that means. Like, you are putting up how many units?
We built three projects and have 144 units of affordable senior housing here on our campus. Our rents are locked in for a long time, as Mark was talking about those kinds of things for a number of years. And what, in fact, let me just share with you kind of how that deal came about. So we survived a bankruptcy, which is unusual. And not-for-profits have about an 8% chance of survival in bankruptcy. And since we had one before that, you have 8% times 8% is like 1.6% chance of survival in your second one. It's not very good. Nobody told me that, luckily, or I would have given up. So we were owned by Westchester Medical Center, sort of like the folks at Health Alliance are today. And so we were able to have them removed as our active parent and become independent, something we fired the owners. Who ever heard of that? We were able to become independent, and but as part of that, Westchester kept a reverter clause that if the hospital was used for anything other than a hospital, it would revert back to them. So they didn't think we were going to make it, is what that means. But they had a buyout clause, but it had a fairly short window, only a few years that we had to pay them back to buy this reverter clause out. So we didn't have any money. We were really poor. Today we're in a much, much better position, vastly better, incredibly better. But at that time we had no money. And so I needed to find a way to raise the hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to pay off Westchester. So I had lunch with a developer who came highly recommended. We had actually worked with a number of developers, and this was the one that my board wanted because we all liked it. I love it. I go and I have lunch with him. And over lunch, on a napkin, this is how the deal went, he said, I'd like to do business with you. What do you want? I said, I don't have any money. But let's start with the fact that we don't have any money. I need you to put up all the money. He said, yeah, I hear that all the time. And yes, I will put up all the money. And I said, and I don't know anything about building housing. That just, you know, I run a hospital, but I need you to do all the work. He said, yep, I know that. I'm a developer. We'll do all the work. And I said, and I don't know anything about running it afterwards, so I need you to run it, of course. He goes, yep, I've got 3,000 units or whatever he had at that time. I'm sure he's got quite a bit more now. He said, I'll run it. So I said, that's good. And he said, so what are you going to do? I said, I want to take credit for it. So he said, all right, that's good. And I said, is there anything else? And he shouldn't have said that. I said, yes, actually, there is a couple of other things. I said, I have 5 acres of land that I need to sell to this venture. And I need $700,000 for it so that I can buy out the reverter clause so that I can actually subdivide the land. Otherwise, I can't even subdivide the land because of the reverter clause. So he said, that's, you know, how many left to figure out, you know,
that's
5 acres.
How much is that an acre?
For 5 acres, it's 700, about 125,000 an acre. I mean, you know, that's like gold-plated land here in Ellenville. And this is before all of the escalation, and still continue to be fairly poor relative to the rest of the community and have lower prices. But imagine, I mean, that was just unbelievably high. So he said, that's quite a bit, but all right, I'll do it. Is there anything else? I said, yes, there is. What else could you want? I said, at the end of the project, I want to be your partner and own half of it. He said, you mean you don't want to put up any money, you don't want to do any work, you don't want to manage the thing afterwards, you want $700,000 for the land, and you want to own half of the project afterwards? And I said, yep, that's what I want. And he said, I'd have never had a partner before. I've never had anyone who asked me like that, and I'll do it. And that was the beginning of an incredible partnership that's gone on for other projects and other things. And then as I was driving back to the hospital afterwards, I was just so angry with myself. Because if I could have gotten that, what else could I have done? And then I thought about it, and I said, you know, you got everything you wanted. Why can't you be happy when you got everything you asked for? And so I want you to know that that is probably the best deal I ever did. And I'm really happy with it, even though briefly I questioned that. So that's the kind of things that we've been able to do. I mean, that became the first for-profit, not-for-profit joint venture in New York State. We were able to pay off the reverter clause. And as the tax credits expire on the projects, the hospital has an equity infusion that will help us.
I know.
We want to get him to do the jail.
There were two bidders on that.
Yeah. You put one in. Right.
That's true.
I'm not here to. I'm not going to. I know that will make Mark uncomfortable.
Can you also?
It's starting to be like an episode of Shark Tank. Right.
We were doing so well.
Yeah. I'm going to switch it over. It's small, but I think it also speaks to the service of social determinants of health. You know, including the substance abuse and the other things. It's very briefly because I want to be able to do this with our jail. Can you just quickly talk about the farm to table, the prison, and the food.
Yes.
Just quickly, how that's working.
Yeah. So one of the projects that we came up with, and actually was thought of by Dr. Kalman, who's the founder of the Institute for Family Health, and I, over a beer in Grand Central Station.
You always say every idea you have with him, it comes over a beer. Mm-hmm. Grand Central. Is this one time with him, or is this like...
I want to know what kind of beer.
Ongoing.
I can't tell you how many times he started his story.
A lot of stories are like that. You know, good things happen when you add beer to them.
Yeah.
I also believe in cork, just for those of you who don't drink.
No good story ever.
So we came up with this idea of taking a different look at things. We're in healthcare, we look at everything medically. And so once somebody gets sick, we are here to heal them. And we got to talking about this, and why couldn't we come up with programs that would help people to be healthier, so they wouldn't need us as much? And that led us into this concept of population health, which in many ways addresses the social determinants of healthcare, and we've proposed other projects around this through this program. So we have this really four pillars of population health for us. One is diet, another one is moderate exercise, another one is risk reduction, and the fourth one is really the social determinants of healthcare and our approach to solving that. And it's a coaching model where we have community health workers and we have programs to help people to learn to eat properly. And we even provide every other Thursday, we have at least 100 people, 100 families that come here and get free fruits and vegetables that are locally grown in many cases on the prison farms. And we get to just give it to them. So we have a room bigger than this with bags covering tables everywhere, so we can have over 100 bags of food that we give to people.
Grown on the prison.
Grown locally. It's really incredibly, it's a wonderful, and the Food Bank of the Hudson Valley and others contribute those foods.
And those 100, just so you know, is not exhaustive. There are more people that show up than we can provide for, unfortunately. We started at 4 o'clock, but they're lined up out there at 1:30, 2 o'clock.
Right.
Some people line up to their cars. Since COVID, before we used to do it a little differently, now we're doing it as a drive-through model. And, I mean, by half hour, 45 minutes, we're completely wiped out.
Completely wiped out. It's, it's amazing.
It's incredible.
It really
is. I'd love to do that at our jail. But yeah. And the other, I just want to say, so that you can do your tour, because also we have two people who have buses to catch, is that they've created in here at Ellenville, also in partnership with the Institute of Family Health and many others, is the Rural Health Network.
That is the Rural Health Network. That's
and
the
they've received a lot of funding. They consistently receive a lot of funding, really to focus on identifying the needs within Ellenville and Worthing and responding to them, and then partnering with Orange County and several other counties.
Sullivan County.
And unfortunately, wasn't it Green? Like, at one point, the network was all of these counties, but there was this black hole in Kingston because there was one hospital who didn't want to partner in it.
Well, also, it's a rural network, and a rural network.
Anyway, we tried to get them in this, and they wouldn't do it. Yeah. But, I mean, just to say that there's been a lot of terrific, you know, state and federally funded projects that they continue to do focused on rural health that are pretty remarkable.
Really, it's been really an incredibly humbling experience to preside when all these good things have happened and to be able to think of ideas and find partners who are just, wow, that's a great idea, let's do it. And so we just get to do stuff. And the Institute for Family Health has been an incredible partner. Dr. Talman is an amazing fellow. He is just endlessly curious. Well, if we did that, I wonder if this would work. And then, you know, I'm looking at it, well, if that worked, what about, and, you know, it's great. We have relationships with Catholic Charities, with Cornell Cooperative Extension comes and does cooking classes for us and stuff like that. We take families shopping and help them to read the labels and understand the nutritional value of food so they can make better decisions. Our premise is that if we can help people connect themselves to what the decisions that they're making about their health, they will make better decisions. So risk reduction is addressing things like drugs. It's people take a lot of risk. Alcohol, tobacco, illicit drugs, prescription drug abuse, and all those kinds of things that, you know, that we need to connect people. So things like harm reduction for people that are addicted to opiates. Very hard to get off of opiates. Very, very hard. So we're trying to help people to have someone who has a Narcan kit available when they use, know that they're using, so that they can make sure that if they overdose, they can be Narcan back to life. This is not my non-clinical way of explaining it. You know, things like that. And I think we made a difference. I think in the year before COVID, there was, through our work and work with all of the partners in Ulster County that participated, which was quite a number, we were able to drive down deaths in Ulster County from opioids by 41%. And then COVID hit, and it's all been given back, and it's worse than it ever was right now. We're hoping, although this year it's trending better, so I really have a lot of optimism that it's getting better, and it's going to continue to get better. So we have a message of collaboration, innovation, a partnership, and quite frankly, this body granted us the ability to use the last $200,000 of the Ellenville Million from another administration a long time ago, though Mark was around that whole time, which was left over because we weren't even eligible, because I was on the committee and I didn't think that it was appropriate for me to be on the committee and then be self-serving to take money from the Ellenville Million. But when it wasn't used, I was like, well, you know, we have a need to create some office space here for this purpose, you know, from a basement, storage space. And I came to this committee, which had different faces at that time.
Except
for you, which you supported us very much.
Craig. Yeah.
And Craig was there too, yes. Thank you. Which supported us. And then we had to go through all of the, you know, whatever we had to do, ways and means. And then a full vote of the legislature which I'm very proud of. I think it was a 20-2 vote or something like that, or 20-3 something. It was a very strong vote to support us in this effort, and let us have that leftover money that we weren't eligible for originally, because I was on the committee and didn't feel that was appropriate for me to be on the committee.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for hosting us, and I'll take a motion to adjourn first.
So move.
Okay, second. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
And we really appreciate hearing about what you're doing, and anyone who wants to get a tour, I highly encourage it.